Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Cities across the country are battling surges of COVID-19 as they struggle to reopen, enact more restrictions or less, and increase hospital capacity even more. But what's happening here at home? This week, we're checking in with South Dakota mayors. Yesterday, we welcomed Rapid City Mayor Steve Allender. Tomorrow, we check in with the mayor of Sturgis. And today, Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Ten Haken. Mayor Ten Haken, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Lori. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing all right. First of all, as a resident of the city of Sioux Falls, hey, those fireworks were all right.
Yes. Wasn't it nice we had them? It was awesome. And I'm assuming you're not talking about the ones you shot off in your own driveway, right?
No, but, you know, you didn't need me to obey that rule because plenty of people were not obeying that rule. Sorry.
I know.
I hate to break it to you.
We hear that one every year, and every year we deal with it. People are getting a little bit better, but that's a tough one to enforce for sure.
Yeah. You must have heard people. I mean, talk about the decision to have those fireworks, because there was no event, no speeches, no music. You just could head out to, you know, that T. Denny Sanford part of town with the Premier Center, I mean, and Elmwood Golf Course and by the Holiday Inn, and just find a spot. For a while, we kind of cruised the loop a little bit on Russell and sort of went back and forth, which was sort of fun. And how did you make that decision and realize that maybe the people of the city sort of needed that?
Well, you said it right there. People needed that. There's just some normalcy that people need to have on some certain things. And fireworks on the 4th of July is one of those. And so when it looked like it wasn't going to happen initially, I got to give a lot of credit to a gentleman named John Small in our community who kind of stepped up to help organize it. And you know, we then came alongside him to make sure it happened. But there's just a desire right now in the community, and then we're going to talk about COVID a little bit right now as well, that people are so hungry for signs of the way things used to be, whether that's just being able to go out for a ride and interact with friends and go to fireworks and maybe grab an ice cream. I mean, there's a desire for that in South Dakota. It's making it increasingly challenging, though, for people to still realize there's a virus that's still with us and present, and that we're not entirely in a normal state. We still have some things we have to abide by, some things we have to still do differently. But I am glad that there is some things that are returning to normal, like fireworks on the 4th of July, for instance.
Yeah. Let's talk about sort of dealing with the pandemic and the economy and, you know, professional bull riders coming to town. There's events. People want to do things. It has to make you sort of nervous and yet also encouraged. How do you deal with, you know, the leadership aspect of talking to Sioux Falls citizens and saying, I know you want to do this, but you really got to think twice about how you do it?
Mm-hmm. You know, there is increasingly two camps, and the chasm between the camps is widening. And you know, the one camp is be safe, stay at home, don't go out. And the other camp is like, hey, we're back, baby. And events are back and everything's normal. And the reality is we're kind of in the middle there. And we're in the middle in South Dakota, probably much more so than some of the other states. And I just had a meeting with the folks from Sanford Health, and they're doing the Sanford International Golf Tournament, and that's going to be in September, and talked about the precautions that they'll need to take with spectators and with things like that. And the PBR here in Sioux Falls is some of the same protocols. They said, listen, we're going to make this a very safe event. We have entirely retooled not only the fan experience in the Premier Center itself, but also the way that the athletes, the bull riders, all the staff are having to interact with one another, interact with the fans. It's a different day right now to have an event like this. And quite honestly, it's very expensive. It's very costly because you don't sell as many tickets and your cost of putting on an event really increases. And so my message to people has been this. You know, you need to do what you feel comfortable doing. And if you feel safe getting out there, spending some dollars, going to restaurants, going to the PBR, you need to do that. But you also need to know that that's a personal responsibility and a personal accountability issue for you and your family. Now, these restaurants, events, they are taking incredible measures to ensure a safe experience for you. But if you don't feel safe doing that, you don't feel comfortable doing that, don't do that. And we've increasingly seen that there's people who are comfortable with that. There's people who are not. And we're trying to make sure that people feel comfortable, whatever decision they make, if they want to stay home or if they want to go out, they can do that.
Is there an in-between of people who want, or you know, that we're encouraging courtesy to, and just, you know, yes, get out and do it if you're not concerned, but, you know, wear that mask and be courteous to the other people, because the consequences of your actions impact more than just you and your family.
Yeah, great example. I had a lunch meeting yesterday. I had a larger and more popular Sioux Falls restaurant, and they have reduced their seating capacity to half, even though they don't have to. And they have some regulars who are very comfortable going to that restaurant. And some of these regulars are older folks because of those steps that the restaurant has taken. Their tables are very far distance apart. All the staff wears masks. They've created a very safe environment for people to dine out. And because of that, the patrons are visiting their venue. You have other restaurants that aren't taking those measures, and people are patronizing that because they don't care. They quite honestly don't care. And I don't mean that in like a selfish way, but there's just different levels of concern that people have on the spectrum. And our role as elected officials is to say, okay, how do we ensure that the economy keeps working, that people who do have concerns still can conduct business in the city safely, and that these businesses are also abiding by some of the protocols that they need to enact to ensure a safe experience for their customer. It's just a very delicate balance right now. But the good news is the fact that South Dakota overall has seen low hospitalization rates and low mortality rates from COVID. And when I was meeting with the folks I mentioned earlier about the golf event, I said, listen, if we could put a bubble over Sioux Falls and not have anyone watch CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or whatever it is, and just look at what's happening here, they get a very different story. But they're seeing these tremendous outbreaks in places like Florida and Texas and California and assuming we're next. Well, we have 850,000 people in this entire state. Okay, we have a fraction of the population base, and we're social distance in a lot of ways by default, just in how we live here. And so that in and of itself has given us a tremendous advantage, and why we haven't seen yet, you know, the spread and the surge, other than one specific outbreak we had early on as a result of COVID.
Is it possible for a city the size of Sioux Falls to really enact a robust community screening program that maybe other cities can't do? I know you can't put that bubble over us, but I think a lot of people are saying, well, we could be doing a lot more if we had, you know, comprehensive public health antibody, you know, results. If we had community screening of random, you know, is our testing and our screening robust enough, or do we have room to grow in that area so that our economy can benefit from it?
Well, I think, you know, that's a great question, Lori. And, you know, right now we're testing around 2,000 people a week in Sioux Falls. I just got fresh numbers. You know, last week we tested around 1,700 people in the Sioux Falls MSA, and we had about a 7% positivity rate. So you can do the math. It's a little under 100 people who tested positive in the MSA. So we continue to hang around this 5, 6, 7% positivity rate. So the thought is if you test more, you maybe have more positive cases. But our positivity rate has been very much pretty flat around that 5-6% mark. And so until we see a dramatic spike or increase in that, that's the assumption we continue to go off, is that we have this, you know, 5-7% positivity rate in our market, of which only a fraction of those who do test positive need enhanced care. And we have today right around 20 people between Sanford and Avera Health in Sioux Falls that are inpatients for COVID-related illnesses, when at one point we were projecting the need for potentially 500-600 inpatients at this time. So from that aspect, you can see how this has been so hard to just legislate through and to lead through, because the projections have been so wildly varying, and the hospitalization rate, excuse me, at one point we were talking that it'd be closer to 25%. Well, now we're dealing more with 5%. The mortality rate from the virus has been way lower than we anticipated. That's obviously certainly not to minimize any loss of life that's happened from COVID, because it's all tragic, of course, but it's not nearly what we anticipated. And that's what's caused some of the shifts we've seen in policy, where things are opening. We are encouraging people to get out there and support some of these businesses that have taken safe practices, because we feel comfortable based on the numbers we've seen.
Let's talk a little bit about capital spending and the plan that you had to lay out, which is somewhat less than the plan that you laid out next year. Tell us a little bit about some of the highlights of that. What's important during this time as we look at an economic catastrophe nationwide, really? What's it look like in Sioux Falls?
Well, we have not been immune to the revenue shortfall that a lot of states and cities have experienced. I will say this, we go into COVID in a strong financial position in the city, in that, for instance, our debt per capita in Sioux Falls is right around $1,750 per resident. Picking on Fargo, for instance, theirs is north of $7,000 per resident. So we go into this in a strong financial position. That being said, even when we have projects we want to do, and we have some big things that we've wanted to do in the city, we still have to respond to the current economic landscape. And that economic landscape right now is showing a sales tax shortage that, I mean, last month we were around 15% down year over year. Our entertainment tax closer to 50% down year over year. Those are huge cuts. And so that has forced us as a city to say, what are the critical services that we need to focus on? What do people expect of their city? And they expect infrastructure investments, public safety. They want to feel safe in their community. They want to make sure their water turns on, their toilets flush. And so a lot of our capital budget that we've laid out, there's not a lot of shiny things in there. It's a lot of just investments in the core tenets of government to deliver the services. And we don't have a lot of those excess funds for parks and for new pools and some of those amenities that will have to wait given the current environment.
As you look at issues of equity, you've been talking about projects in the Whittier neighborhood to deal with power lines and things like that. Tell us a little bit about why that's important to move forward in projects in neighborhoods all kinds of neighborhoods in the city, but particularly this Whittier neighborhood and focusing there.
Well, the core of the city, the heartbeat of any city, is its downtown. And you show me a city with a dead downtown, and I'll show you a city that's dying a slow death. And so the Whittier neighborhood is blocks away from our downtown. And so too often, I think, when we look at our downtown, we think of, five or six square blocks of an area where we have a lot of our retail. But our downtown expands beyond that. And so we need to continue to look at investments that we're making in infrastructure projects and in housing projects and safety projects that extend to Whittier, extend to Pettigrew Heights and the Cathedral District. All these neighborhoods that surround our downtown, the stronger those can be, the more attractive they can be, the more safe they can be, the stronger our downtown will be, and thus the stronger our economy as a whole will be. Because, as I mentioned, the downtown is really, it's the heartbeat of your city.
I also want to talk with you a little bit about policing, and that's kind of a conversation for another time. But I hope that we can have those ongoing conversations. But for right now, a snapshot for today. What's next for you as mayor after the protest? The sort of, you posted on Facebook and on social media, reach out to my office and let's have a conversation. Are there new conversations? Are you having conversations you hadn't had before that are opening your eyes to a direction that the city maybe needs to consider?
Absolutely, I am. And that's been good for me, because you hit it right on the head, that there are people that I'm conversing with, that I'm meeting with in this office, who otherwise never would have felt comfortable coming to the mayor's office to talk about a topic. And specifically, I've met with a lot of people of color over the last couple weeks who reached out and said, hey, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with you on policy. I just want you to hear my perspective on this topic and where I come from on this and some ideas I have. And those ideas, you know, some are palatable and some are realistic, some are not. But from that, you start to determine what policy can look like. I think what we're seeing in some aspects across the country is reactive policy to the current environment we're in. And not that those policy decisions are wrong, but when you make them so quickly and you make them emotionally, you have to question whether or not there's staying power to those policy decisions. So what we're doing in Sioux Falls is there are a bevy of conversations and discussions we're having. You're going to see in the capital budget next week that we're going to roll out, or excuse me, operating budget, some investments and some protocols that we're going to ask our city council to invest in as a result of some of the things we've seen over the last, you know, 30 to 60 days. And so we're doing our part here, but we also have to realize that Sioux Falls is not Minneapolis, is not Denver, is not Houston. We have done community policing efforts for years and years, from SROs, community resource officers, citizens police academies, mental health resource officer, which I just added to the budget last year. So in a lot of ways, we're ahead of some of our peer cities in the community policing we've done, which is why we've also not seen some of the volatile policing issues that some of these other cities have dealt with, quite honestly, for many, many years.
Mayor Paul Ten Haken, we hope to have you back in the future. Thank you for taking time for us today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Laurie.